Today on Maine Calling, stress in the workplace. Does your job give you anxiety, sleepless nights, heartburn? You're not alone. According to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, more than 80% of American workers experience stress on the job, and 65% say it's a major source of stress. Stress can lead to heart problems and even death. It's estimated to cost the economy $300 billion a year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the reasons for workplace stress, which factors you can't control and which you can. We'll discuss the most stressful professions, and we'll learn some effective tools for not just coping, but thriving at work. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn, and by Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Feeling stressed out at work may seem like a normal thing, but it can be harmful to your job, your relationships, and your health. Today, we'll learn about the many causes of workplace stress and get some tips on how to manage stressful conditions. Joining me, Amy Wood, licensed psychologist and executive coach. Her new book is Lawyer Like an Athlete. And Mary Axelson is with us as well, strategic planning and human resources consultant with WeMax Consulting. We would like you to join the conversation. Are you concerned with someone whose job is too stressful or about your own mental health at work? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. I'll repeat that, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. And Amy, I'll start with you. You know, there may be people listening right now saying, no, duh, work is stressful. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the nature of it. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say to them that all of us are stressed. We're all living in a very stressful society where we're moving very, very quickly. There are a lot of demands placed on us. A lot of us are distracted quite a bit of the time, and frankly, change is constant. So I can't really think of any professions where people might be free of stress, but there are some professions where stress is higher. Those professions tend to be jobs where you're really helping people, where lives may be at risk. For example, supposedly a very high stress profession is to be an anesthesiologist. And you might understand that if you're having to help people go into surgery and you have to figure out exactly what they need to go under, making sure they're going to wake up, that's a lot of pressure. Likewise, physicians, nurses, paramedics, very, very stressed, and certainly lawyers, one of the highest stress professions, because it's all about pressure.
Right. And this isn't just about not feeling comfortable. This is a serious health consideration to be under perpetual stress.
Yeah, it is. And studies do show that when people don't feel psychologically safe in the workplace, like if it's a toxic type of environment where you don't feel secure in your job or putting up with any kind of mistreatment, the stress is much higher.
I would also say that,
go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, we're hearing things like we're in a loneliness epidemic. Mm-hmm. You're hearing reports of burnout being at an ultimate high. And I think in addition to what Amy just spoke to, what's contributing to this is that organizational dynamics have changed coming out of the post, we're in the post-pandemic era, yet we see organizations still wanting to hold on to whatever it is they thought they were prior to the pandemic. And so, for example, for the first time in our history, we have five generations in the workforce. Okay. We have a fair amount of diversity, yet organizations are pulling back on their diversity and equity programmings. And what's happening is employees are not feeling seen. Leaders are not understanding or don't have the skill set to lead through these changing dynamics. And we're really still unsure about where do we need to be when we're trying to do our work. Can we be virtual? Do we need to be hybrid? For some reason, do we have to be on site? And so you have all these organizational dynamics and conditions that are happening that we're still trying to sort through that contributes to some of the stress that Amy just described.
Well, and I wanted to ask you, Mary, we're learning that stress is frankly quite bad for your heart, can lead to heart disease and kill you, but it's also bad for business, right? I mean, I think there might be managers out there who intentionally stress their employees, believing that brings out the best in them. And yet, on the other hand, I'm reading that workplace stress costs the economy $300 billion a year. How does it cost the economy that? Why?
Well, Cigna did this really great study a couple years ago, specifically looking at loneliness. And they say that loneliness actually cost employers $154 billion a year in lost productivity. So lost productivity shows up in I'm not at work because I'm not well based on some of the health conditions that we just spoke about. I'm on a leave of absence, I resign, where we also know that when you're in a stressed, anxious place, it affects your ability to problem solve, right? And what are we doing on a daily basis in our jobs? We are problem solving, right? So if we're experiencing stress and anxiety affecting our ability to problem solve, collaborate, come together and partner, we're not going to be as productive and we're not going to get those results that organizations are looking for.
And what about the enthusiasm gap? I'm guessing, Amy, that for a lot of people, if I'm feeling stressed all the time, if I'm dreading going to my job, I'm not going to feel very enthusiastic about what I do every day.
And that's especially important now because our society has really changed quite a bit, particularly coming out of the pandemic, where people used to go to other places to get support and to have camaraderie. For example, people are going to church way less today. Churches are closing all over the country. You don't see as many people participating in community organizations like the YMCA or Boys and Girls Clubs. And so there's a lot more emphasis placed on work as a source of way more than a paycheck. People are expecting, as Mary said, there's a loneliness epidemic going on. People are looking to work as a place where they will be heard, they will be seen, they will be treated well. What people want most from leadership these days, even more than benefit, salary, the corner office, what's important to them is that they experience care and concern from their leader. That shows you what's going on, where work has become a place where people go for connection as well as to get a paycheck.
It's interesting because when you said they were looking for, I thought you were going to say to be recognized and to be given agency, but instead you said care and concern. Mary.
So Korn Ferry did a study a couple of years ago, and they said the top three retention factors are that if you want to keep employees for at least 5 years, are care and concern, trust in your leadership, and the opportunity to grow and develop. And when employees are saying care and concern, they're not saying care and concern just as you see me as a worker on the job. They're saying, I want you to see me as a whole person. I care deeply about the work that I'm doing and the impact that I want to have, but I also have dynamics happening in my life outside of work that either are going to help me do my work better or ain't going to get in the way of me doing my work. So, for example, we've heard a lot about the sandwich generation and the fact that you have people who are caring for their parents, as well as they may still have school-aged children. You know, if you think about the impact of the pandemic, when facilities were closing, children were not able to go to school. We're still dealing with the fact that we have a daycare shortage. We don't have enough employees, people actually at daycares, and parents are on wait lists for years to be able to get adequate care for their children. So I want you to show me care and concern from the perspective of saying, I know that sometimes you have conditions outside of work, like your parents or your children, that require you to give them attention. And I want to work with you so that you can care for your family in the way that you want to, as well as be able to show up and at work, showing that care and that dedication and that commitment. So how do we have that kind of conversation so that I see you as that whole person? You feel seen, you don't feel alone, you feel supported and cared about, which then goes right back, Jen, to a conversation we were having around productivity. Right. So if I have my leader interacting with me in that way, I am going to feel more loyal to the organization. I'm going to know that I have that partnership and that support, which is going to help me with my problem solving. And then I'm going to be in a better place to be able to deliver those results.
Right. So we're learning, we're hearing some advice for managers, for employers, how to care about their employees, how to give them not care and support and agency. And then, Amy, I want to ask you about individuals. If you are feeling overwhelmed by stress, what can you do to get out of this cycle?
Well, one thing that's really important, and I know you asked me about individuals, but I think it starts with leadership. There are beliefs. Mary and I have come up, we have a joint venture. We've come up with a lot of different programming, and it's all centered around changing leadership beliefs that no longer are effective. And these beliefs are still widely practiced and creating a lot of stress for employees. And two of those beliefs happen to be number one, that you can achieve work-life balance and that success is being able to have your work on one side of an equally weighted scale and home on the other with separation clearly between the two. And so employees sometimes create more stress for themselves by aspiring toward this definition of work-life balance that is a total myth. Because we're accessible 24 hours a day, people are working at home. What Mary and I teach leaders and those they lead is it's about integration, integrating your work and home life, designing your life in a way that works for you. So you have to be flexible. The other big belief that really gets in the way of people lowering stress is I think it's a nationwide belief that productivity is the most important thing. And when you take time away to take care of yourself or to interact with other people, both, by the way, essential aspects of lowering your stress level, your work suffers. That's the belief. So many employees, instead of taking time to care for themselves, taking small steps, maybe to get more sleep or to eat better or to spend more time with their loved ones, they don't do that because they also have this belief that no, I need to be producing. And that's the way to be successful. And as Mary said, a lot of people during the pandemic who were working round the clock trying to get things done and not taking care of themselves, they broke down. And people are still recovering from that. So to answer your question about the individual, one main thing that Mary and I bring to all our work is this idea of taking tiny steps, not looking at it like we often do this time of year when it comes to resolutions. You know, I'm going to overhaul my whole life. I'm going to start going to the gym every day. I'm going to start eating really healthy foods, even though I've never done that before. I'm going to have a better relationship with someone I'm having problems with, you know, all of it. And then typically by mid-January, most people have dropped their resolutions because they're just too big and they've ended up creating more stress. So Mary and I talk about taking really, again, tiny, tiny steps. And there are a lot of things that we actually have control over that we may not realize because we're too stressed to slow down and look at that. And there are a couple of things I'll start with. One is energy management. Energy is really a currency. It's just like money. So we wake up every day and we look at, okay, how much energy do I have? What do I need to get done? Is this a really high energy day where I have a lot of things to do? Is it a low energy day? And what can I drop if it's a high energy day? How can I take my efforting away from draining, energy draining situations and put my energy into situations that will give back? So it's about investing your energy. And I'll just give you a couple examples and then move on. Number one might be, are you spending too much time surfing the internet? This is something a lot of us do mindlessly. And often people will say to Mary and I, oh, I like, scrolling through Instagram and Facebook. It helps me relax before I go to bed. But when you really question them, they say, you know what? It actually is draining. It's kind of depressing. So another thing that people do that's quite draining is spend time with people they really don't want to be with out of obligation and guilt. Spending time with people who bring them down and don't bring out their best. So I think the number one answer to this is, ask, how am I using my energy? Recognize it as a currency and make a resolution that I think people can be successful with to withdraw energy where you can from where it's being sapped and put it into what is invigorating to you and build your
It sounds
enthusiasm.
to me like people really, a step toward that might be being self-aware. When
Yes.
I do this thing, scrolling through the internet or going over to someone's house, how do I feel inside? And if it's making me feel a certain way, to be aware of that. Mary?
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's actually you went right where I wanted to go, Jen. So thank you. The first step is self-awareness. We have to understand who we are, what we need, and where is the stress coming from. And so Amy gave some examples of where we might be behaving in a way that's depleting us. Well, you first have to understand, are you feeling depleted and why are you feeling depleted and where can you make those adjustments? The other thing, what we find is around well-being is oftentimes we don't even understand what it is that we need, right? What are those shifts and those changes? And so one of the things that I've seen, an adjustment that I've seen in my coaching practice, and I know Amy has as well, is that I'm being hired to come in and help with leadership, but what I'm also having conversations around is well-being. And so how do you take better care of yourself so you can then show up holistically in your life in the way that you want to? And that might be as simple as I need to start going to bed at a consistent time each night. I need to turn the TV or the phone, whatever your thing is, off an hour before so my brain has time to rest and shift. It might be I'm going to start meditating for 5 minutes 3 times a week so I can get myself centered before I go into work. You might be feeling stressed about money. So maybe it is about, you know what? I'm going to start taking, a better inventory of my money and how can I adjust my budget better so that I'm not feeling so stressed, right? There's 9 aspects of well-being. We often tend to think about one, and that's health, right? Am I eating? Am I drinking water? Am I getting exercise? But you have to look at yourself holistically. Where is the stress coming from? And then, as a result of that, what are those shifts or those adjustments I need to make?
Well, we do have to take a break. When we come back, Amy, something that Mary said reminded me of a Kobe Bryant quote in your book.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you about that, about
Okay.
meditating. I'm also going to ask our audience to call. What are your questions about managing stress at work, whether you're a manager or an employee? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're addressing the very real problem of stress in the workplace. Who's most susceptible? What are some ways to address the root causes that lead to anxiety and exhaustion and worse? Our guest today, Mary Axelson, a strategic planning and human resources consultant with WeMax Consulting, and Amy Wood, psychologist, executive coach, and author, her new book, Lawyer Like an Athlete. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. As promised, Amy, Mary mentioned meditating, maybe 5 minutes, 3 days a week, which might sound silly to some people. It might sound woo-woo, but tell us what Kobe Bryant says about meditating.
Well, Kobe Bryant, and I mentioned this in my book, says that meditation really just sets him up for success every day. That's essentially why he does it every day. And I think it's important to point out that people who meditate, you know, are not sitting on a cushion, cross legs for an hour every morning. And the other thing about meditation is it's not about ridding yourself of thoughts. We can't do that. So two things: meditation can be effective, even like Mary said, if you do it 5 minutes, 3 times a week, 4 times a week, ideally you would want to meditate on a regular basis, because what meditation actually does, and this is huge when it comes to reducing stress, meditation helps you to get distance from your racing mind. Those thoughts are on their own. You know, we have no control over our thoughts. We can't stop our thoughts. We can't say, I'm just going to stop thinking about negative things and become a positive person. It takes training. It takes time. But the thing about meditation that helps you reduce stress is you're stepping away from those thoughts and acknowledging, you know, so those thoughts are there. They're doing what they want to do, but I'm in charge of how I want to respond. And that really relates to reducing workplace stress, because one big reason that we're all stressed at work is because we're moving too fast. We're not taking the time to think through our responses, and that's creating miscommunication. It's creating conflict in the workplace. And of course, that amps up everybody's stress. So the idea of meditation, anybody can do it. You know, it's just about, let's say, closing your eyes for 5 minutes and just be with your thoughts without trying to control them. You do have control over your response, but you can't stop the thoughts.
And I can't remember his quote exactly, but what resonated with me was that the idea of being in control of your day, instead of your day being in control of you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary. Yeah. And I think that's a really great point. Part of what has happened to us is that we've gotten disconnected with ourselves, in addition to being disconnected with others, and that we're operating in a more reactive versus proactive manner. And so, for example, successful CEOs will say to you that they only check their emails 3 times a day. Okay? They check it at the start of the day, they check it in the middle of the day, they check it at the end of the day, because they know that emails are very distracting. And I could get their attention, and then they're off working on something else that then gets in the way of what they set themselves up to accomplish for the day. Right? Now, we're always going to have things that just happen during the course of the day that we didn't anticipate and that we're going to have to reprioritize. But that practice of meditating, getting connected with myself, calming, like setting my intentions for the day, in addition to looking for ways to reduce distractions that might interfere with your priorities and what you need to accomplish, are just two simple things that you can do to help you reduce the stress.
Amy, earlier when you were talking about very stressful professions, you mentioned anesthesiologists and lawyer, and those are both white collar professions, but I think there are a lot of professions that might not be categorized as white collar, that would be categorized as professional or blue collar or service positions, which are also very stressful. And I'm wondering if the things that you're talking about here apply to everybody.
Yes, they absolutely do. You know, there are a lot of research studies that have been done on which professions are more stressful than others. And it depends on what studies you look at, but there's a study out there that says the most stressful position you could possibly have is being a roofer. You know, being up on roofs, for some reason, you know, that's very stressful, probably because it puts a lot of physical stress on you. You might be in a dangerous work situation where you could fall off the roof. You might be working up there in really hot days. But I would say across the board, what these studies find is that if you're in any kind of position where you're serving other people, having to deal with the public on a regular basis, especially the stress level goes up when you're dealing with people who could be upset. So for example, I had a client, a coaching client who was a toll booth worker, and all day long he said he was dealing with people who were angry. You know, they would take out their anger on him. For example, throwing money at him or yelling at him. And so he was under a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. I've also talked to people who deliver mail. They experience the same thing, dealing with the public who are yelling at them because they're leaving them junk mail, for example, when it's really not something that the mail carrier has a choice about. So I think what happens here is if you're dealing with people as part of your profession, remember, we're all stressed. And so you're dealing with people who are under pressure, no matter what you're doing. We're all interacting with each other, we're all stressed. And if we're not slowing down and thinking about how we want to respond, and if we don't change our belief from this antiquated belief that's very standard in our society, which is that taking time away from work, again, to take care of yourself, to be with other people, to have other interests, to let your brain rest, is going to interfere with work. When the new belief people need to start practicing is that taking care of yourself, having interesting diversions away from work, spending time with family and friends, just letting your hair down on a regular basis, is the very foundation of productivity.
Mary, how do you know the line between being able to handle the stress in your job, work on yourself, handle the day-to-day, and the line between, you know what, I need a new job?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I think it goes back to the self-awareness, first of all, that we were speaking about, and what do I value the most? You know, what is important to me, and how am I showing up in those spaces? So, for example, if I'll just use myself, if I know that I'm showing up in a more impatient way, with those that I care and I love, then that's an example. That's an indicator for me that I'm experiencing more stress than I'm able to manage, because I'm operating and behaving in a way that's not aligned with my values. So when I started to see that impatience, first of all, nobody's going to say at my eulogy that I was a patient person. I'm already starting out a little depleted in the patience category. But then I know that when I start to feel really stressed, that my ability to manage my impatience is going to show up more. So that's my indicator that I need to slow it down. Right. I need to check in with myself, and I need to say, okay, what is happening right now that is contributing to me feeling this way and behaving this way? And, Amy talked about earlier about what are those things that I can take off my plate, so that I can get back to being connected to myself and be aligned to my values. One of the things that we often find is that leaders have a very difficult time with delegating. And so it's an example of I'm on the job, I'm taking on too much. I have this belief that I have to do it myself, right? When in fact, the belief needs to be that I want to give my team opportunities to grow and develop. And I do that when I delegate. And I bring them in to the shared success. So, the thing is same thing with at home. We see with women that women still are taking on most of the domestic, responsibilities. And if you're in a two-parent home, it's an opportunity to sit and have a conversation and say, okay, the kids were sick this week. I'm the one that had to take them to the doctors. I'm the one that took the half day off, right? When we're going into next week, I need to be able to lean into work more, to adjust for what just happened this past week. That means you need to do, we need to talk about what you need to do next week so that we have a better division of domestic duties.
I want to talk, Amy, a little bit about different ways in which different people at different ages might be stressed. I'm thinking about someone I know, actually more than one person I know, who is in their 50s and feels as though they may soon be irrelevant in their job. And so they take on more and more responsibility to prove their relevance. But then I'm also thinking about young people and their stress of getting to know everybody at a new job, the feeling of not being sure you're doing your job correctly and you're being judged. So if you could talk about maybe some things that are generational, not because the generations, I don't believe the generations are as different as everybody likes to say they are, but because of where you might be in your career.
Yes, that's a really good point that you're making, that as we evolve as adults, we have different sources of stress. So we find when we look at adults and what they're experiencing, it's probably the people in their 40s right now, 40s, early 50s, that are experiencing the most stress, because those people are in the midst of that sandwich situation that Mary talked about earlier, where they're raising kids, they're taking care of elderly parents, perhaps, and they're also still on their career track, still trying to be competitive, still trying to earn their way up that ladder. However, there's different kinds of stress that can feel equally intense. When you're young, in your 20s, for example, and you just start in your career, we all on this call know what that's like, where you're looking ahead to, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. I have to prove myself. I have to earn my stripes. I'm going to have to work late to show that I'm indispensable. And then as you get toward the end of your career, like that woman you mentioned, Jennifer, in your 50s or older, because people are working longer, you may feel like you may be irrelevant at work. And you have to prove yourself more to show, hey, I'm not old. I can keep up with everybody. So I think that the point here is all of us experience stress, and stress is a part of life. It's not really something we're ever going to be able to get rid of, nor do we want to. And I think one way to reduce your stress is to acknowledge that, that we're not trying to completely obliterate it. We're trying to use stress as a way to motivate us, because that's what stress can do if it doesn't overwhelm us, because we don't know how to cope with it. And it's about staying in that sweet spot where you have just enough stress in your life to keep your momentum going, stay competitive, stay focused, but not so much that you're feeling, I'm exhausted and I can't keep up with this.
Mary, I was probably in my late 30s before I learned how to say no. How hard is it for people to learn how to say no, and how important is it for managing one's stress?
Yeah, it's incredibly important and incredibly difficult. It's also an area where you see women typically having a more difficult time saying no, saying no. A couple things happen for us as women is we think about it from a career perspective. We're afraid that if we say no, that we're going to miss out on opportunities to continue to grow and progress in our career, or it's going to be seen as a negative, right? That we don't care, that we're not interested. We also are socialized as women to be more caretakers. So going back to home, right, we tend to take on more of, like I talked about earlier, those domestic duties. So we're taking on more at work, we're taking more at home, right? We're feeling incredibly stressed. And then what happens is that we personally compromise ourselves in the process. So that's why it's important to go back to, what are my values? What's important to me? What do I really care about, right? How do I lean into my strengths, the things that come naturally to me, so I'm not exerting as much energy? And where is it that I need to start saying no? Because first of all, I care about myself first. And if I don't care for myself first, I'm not going to be able to show up in these other places with these other people in the way that I want. So it's actually part of some of the work that Amy and I do together, is that we help leaders understand where they're sitting in their strengths, where are they sitting in their values, what work are they doing, whether that, you know, from a whole person perspective that is not really aligned with that or their interest. And then when can they incrementally start peeling off, start shedding some of those things that they really want to say no to, And and instead of saying yes, and sometimes to start with that, you might say not right now, right? But can we come back to that, right? It's a more gentler, easier way to say no. And most people will be accepting of that.
And Amy, in my, I'm only going to bring this back to me because I think it's true for so many people. In my case, I had an epiphany that the reason I was continually being asked is because I was the person who said yes. So
That's
it was
right.
perpetuating itself.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and this is something I see a lot with attorneys because their culture, their belief in their culture is that you don't ever say no to a client no matter what. So you get a call from your client at 10 at night, you take the call. You're available around the clock to the point where you're a workaholic, you don't have a life away from work. And when I meet with clients for coaching and I suggest that they start to say no and start to set some limits, they're terrified because their belief is if I don't take that call, if I don't answer my client's demands at whatever hour, then I'm going to lose the client. They're going to go down the street. And what they always find, and I think this is true for anyone at any job where they're too available and they're working too much to their own detriment, when you pull back and you start to set limits and put the emphasis on being happier and healthier away from work, that nurtures your work. And then you become better at what you do, and you actually end up with more clients who want to work with you.
And within the workplace, you're no longer taken for granted.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we have some great emails coming in, but we do need to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, we are talking about stress in the workplace. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Email address talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today's topic, workplace stress and what to do about it. Joining me, psychologist Amy Wood and human resources consultant Mary Axelson. You can share your comments and questions. You still have time. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. So, Mary, before the break, we were talking about saying no or not yet or not right now. What would you like to add to what we were saying before the break?
Yeah, I was, highlighting the importance of values and strengths. But the other thing is, we also have to understand what our intentions are, right? And so one of the things, for example, I do for myself as I go into each year is I take a moment for reflection. And I think about the past year and I say to myself, what went well? What did I really enjoy? What brought me happiness? What do I want to ensure that I continue to practice as I go into the next year? Then I ask myself, where did I get stuck? Right. And as I go into the new year, how do I want to do that differently? So that means, what are some things that I want to let go of? Which is where no comes in. Right. Where are some things that I want to start doing? And if I want to start doing new things, then that means I have to create space. Right. And to be able to create space, I have to be able to say no. Okay. And what I then do is I highlight my high-level goals for the year, and every time I'm in that situation that we were talking about, Jen, where I'm being asked to do something, and I'm struggling with saying no, I go back to my intentions for the year. I go back to my goals, and I say, does that fit in with what I want for myself for this year, or is this going to get in the way of what I want for myself this year? And then that gives me a little bit of internal permission and self-acceptance to be able to step into that place where I might feel uncomfortable, saying no, because now I'm more confident that I'm creating space for those things that I want to say yes to.
An email here from Mark. Mark writes, several deep breaths with the diaphragm muscle rather than the chest can help interrupt stress. For example, four counts in, six counts out. Those belly button breaths can be done anywhere, anytime, and they help reset the stress response. So, Amy, some basic physiological advice.
Yeah, that's what Mark just said. It's great advice. We have so much power when it comes to our breathing to calm ourselves down, and it really, really works. Whether you're trying to get calm at work when something stressful is going on, or you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't sleep, can't fall back to sleep, to take a slow breath in and hold it for a few seconds, and then take a slow breath out 4 or 5 times can dramatically reduce your stress level. And that's
Question here for, oh, go
just an
ahead.
example of how much control we really have. I think a lot of stress comes from trying to control things we have no control over at all. Like I mentioned before, our thoughts. We don't have control over what our thoughts do. We don't have control over the weather. We don't have control over the government, et cetera, how other people respond to us. But we have so much control in so many other areas. And when we focus on that, we tend to feel a lot better. We feel more in control.
Yeah, it's great, Amy, because that one thing I was going to say to you is, for example, I'm just reflecting on two conversations that I recently had with leaders that I'm coaching, and they were going into high travel situations. And one of the things that they were worried about is how they were going to take care of themselves and reduce the stress while they were traveling long days and not being able to care for those day-to-day activities that were going to happen while they were in meetings. So what we did is we looked at the whole week and said, okay, I have 5 days, 4 out of those 5 days I'm working. What are some things that I'm going to intentionally do so that I take good care of myself and don't end up feeling depleted or stressed as a result of the travel? So, for example, reducing drinking. Oftentimes when you're out in business meetings, you might have a glass of wine or you might have a drink. Setting a time that they were going to go back to their hotel room so that they get a fair amount of sleep. Understanding what things had to be completed for the week and delegating to their staff to ensure that the work kept on moving. Making sure that they still got up and got their exercise. There's actually research that says we should drink water every 15 minutes because it improves the electricity in our brain. Which helps us with being present, and problem solving.
All right. Well, Amy, Mary was talking about coaching a leader. I want to come back to the toll worker you were talking about
Sure.
who experiences people being angry, throwing money at them. What is your advice to them about the things they can control, the things they can't control, and how to not let them get to them? Because I have to be honest, Amy, I don't know how I would do that, how I would be able to not let that get to me.
Well, what we did was, first of all, we focused on not taking that personally. It was something that every toll worker was putting up with, and he really didn't have a choice about that. But we also found ways that he could get more fulfillment from his job. There were, things that he ended up getting involved with where he could focus on that, and that helped him not to fixate on the rude people coming through every day, not being nice to him.
All
So,
right. And a question that's related, this is from Alex. What power do workers have to get their leaders or bosses to be more caring and concerned about employees? We're talking about power and control, Mary, and you're talking about managers needing to be in a different mindset and treat people differently. Well, if someone's my boss, how do I get that person to change?
yeah, it's a really good question. And I think the first place is to start with, saying what it is that you need. And communicating that to your leader so that they have that understanding. And hopefully you have a leader that is going to be receptive to that feedback and want to be able to partner with you. I also think that we have choices. And so if you're in a situation where you're working with a leader who's not being responsive to the feedback and what you're sharing and what your needs are, there's a big job market out there, and it's also an opportunity for you to make a shift and to seek out, a company, a culture, and a leader that's most aligned with what's important to you and the care and concern that you want to receive. I think that companies hopefully are catching up and they're understanding that we have to have a more non-hierarchical way of working with each other and having more of that partnership and that collaboration.
Michelle from Georgetown, who couldn't stay on the line, wanted to know, what about leaders having the intuition to empower employees to believe in themselves? And also talking about the smaller resolutions and changes. What about supervisors holding employees accountable in an encouraging way for making positive changes? Amy.
Yeah, well, I think the key word there is encouragement. It's also about how you work with your employees to help them grow and develop. And really what that is, it's first of all understanding that, as we've talked about, people are whole people. They have lives away from work, and working with them to create a life that involves work, but they're the designer of it with you. Secondly, working with them on, what's important to them, what is aligned when it comes to growth and development that is a reflection of their values. And thirdly, working with them in a way where they can take small steps, and where you're looking at it's like an ongoing process where you're meeting regularly with your employee. You're asking them what's working well, what's not working well, where can we make a shift here? And having the understanding that all of us are constantly growing and evolving. There is no end to everything that we're talking about today. It's a daily challenge to deal with stress, and some days are going to be easier than others. But because things are moving so quickly, so much is being thrown at us, some days we're just going to feel overwhelmed. Some days we're not going to be at our best. So we're all just trying to do as well as we can. And leaders who have that perspective tend to be encouraging with their employees, and employees tend to be more committed because of that.
Yeah. Marian, I'm wondering, you mentioned the pandemic earlier on and how the workplace is different than it was before. Yet a lot of people, not just managers, but employees, want to go back to the way it was before. How do we talk to ourselves about that conflict?
Yeah, no, it's really great, and that you're out going back there, Jen. Thank you. I think first of all, we have to identify and acknowledge what has changed, what is different. Our brains are programmed to hold on to the familiar. It's what gives us comfort and gives us a sense of control. So whenever we go into a situation that's unfamiliar, unknown, we feel insecure about, our brain's going to want to bring us back to what we know and understand. And so I think the first place we have to start with is acknowledging the fact that things have changed and what has changed, and that we feel some discomfort about that, and we don't actually maybe know how to understand, don't even know how to deal with that. How do we move through this place of a new normal that feels uncomfortable and unknown to us, so that we can get to our new beginning? We also, I think, organizations have had this expectation that somehow we all know how to behave in this new way. So, for example, during the pandemic, the nomadic community increased by 130%. So now people can go anywhere in the world and do their work, right? Yeah, I'm expected as an employee and as a leader to know how to know how to lead in a distributed workforce where I have people in different locations, different time zones, potentially doing different jobs. Yet none of us have received any type of coaching, learning and development or support knowing how to lead in that way, right? So if I'm sitting there being expected to know how to, lead or to work in this new environment, yet you've given me nothing to show me how to do this, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fall back to what I know and understand how to do, even though it doesn't fit or it's not effective. So I think it's on organizations' responsibility, first of all, to understand where they are, what are the shifts and the adjustments that they need to make, give the investment and the time, to do it, so they can move into their new normal.
And Amy, we just have about a minute left, but I wanted to say this and ask you this. It seems as though we're talking about the workplace, but much of what we say could apply to the family when you're
Oh,
talking
absolutely.
about the fact that encouragement works.
Yes.
When you're talking about taking care of yourself. And I'm wondering if I'm right.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You are right. All of this applies to every part of life, and that's why Mary and I came up with this term that we use. I think others have used this term too. It's about whole person success. It's not about I'm successful at work and then I have this home life that's away from that. It's all one. And that's really the advantage of working in a hybrid world, that we have more freedom than ever before to design an integrated life that works on our terms. And leaders need to get on board with that, but it's scary because it's all about letting go and allowing people to work in a style that resonates with them. And sometimes you don't get to see them at work. So yes, these stress factors are pervasive and they're everywhere
Well,
around.
thank you both so much. The voice you just heard, Amy Wood, psychologist, executive coach, and author. Her brand new book is Lawyer Like an Athlete. And also Mary Axelson, a strategic planning and human resources consultant with WeMax Consulting. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we talk about preventing falls to avoid serious injury, whether indoors or out. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.